The greatest luxury adventures on earth. Abercrombie and Kent. Robot building supplies. Robots got it. On SEN, Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Been a great couple of hours. Terry Wallace to join me and you for the next hour. We'll take plenty of your calls. 1300 736 736. The open line for Werribee Kia. Drop down to Werribee Kia. Janan and the team down there, Aid and Jim, they'll be happy to see your smiling face walk in. They've got a heap of sportages down at Werribee Kia. Quite a few new Seltos in stock. So if you want to head down to Werribee Kia, they're paying top dollar for all trade-ins right now. 1300 736 736 if you'd like to join Terry Wallace. And I've just been talking about David King and his remarks from Gerard Wadley earlier today. Terry Wallace has got a heap of stuff that he wants to get to. So looking forward to the next hour. Welcome to you, Terry. Great to have you in.
G'day, Dwayne. Is your microphone working first up?
Well, that's not right.
For those that mightn't have been listening, the last, I think, about three times I've come on, we've had a stuttered start, but all fine today.
Hey, before we talk about a couple of things on your agenda, what did you make of David King's remarks earlier today saying that he thinks that the AFL, that Gill should ring the coaches and demand they play more attacking football? I think if he calls the coaches, I think they will tell him, you administer, we'll coach. Yeah. And we've got to win games. And if winning them ugly is what we need to do, we'll do it. Where are you at with all of that?
Well, I'm sitting where, how you just explained it then, really. If you have the best side, of course you play pure. Because if we play pure and everyone else plays pure and I've got the best side,
yep,
I win most games. So, but if you have an inferior side, how do you actually compete with the best side, unless you try to trick it up some way?
So can I take you back to the game you coached that was dragging the game to a very slow kick, methodical method, and you nearly won that game, or you did win that game?
Well, there's two games, one at Richmond and one at the Bulldogs. So the year 2000 when we played Essendon, we won that game by playing a Uber flood.
Yep.
And there was a game the Tiger supporters might remember where we had lost by 117 points the week before against Sydney, and we played against Adelaide and played a keepings off.
That was that's the game. I remember the Uber flood. Yep. So did you get a phone call from AFL House saying, Terry, you can't play this keepings off thing?
No, I just got a clip from Kevin Sheedy sort of saying it was basketball crap.
Oh, he did.
So you
rattle his cage. You must have done something right.
You just do what you think you can do as a coach to get a result on a given day, and it's difficult to go in any other direction. As I sort of said, we'd lost the week before by 117.
So you had to do something.
And you're coming out against the number one side. Adelaide were top of the ladder at the time. So.
And your players bought in. I remember the way it unfolded. Your players looked like they were so excited about the idea working. They just bought in.
Yeah, well, I think the two Bowden boys waxed the ball. I mean, they just kept the ball in the back line and just kicked it to each other, and Adelaide didn't come at them. So they just played basically a game of keepings off for four quarters. I'd be the first to say it wasn't the prettiest game of AFL football of all time, but I would still say that most Tiger supporters who'd been the week before, who actually came back, would have left still, pretty happy and pretty satisfied that they got a result.
Mark in Bacchus Marsh, welcome to you. Mark, is Kingy on the right tram here?
Dwayne, Tezza, how you going?
Good morning.
Now, Kingy's 100% right. It's a farce with all the players that are around the ball at once with the congestion. Now, Terry, in 2000, you did the mega flood, but you didn't have 20 players around the ball in that game that Eddie had, and it was a high-scoring game and it still flowed from end to end.
Yeah,
even the goal that Chrissy Grant kicked at the end, the ball flowed from the back all the way to the forward line. So, it was still attacking, free-flowing football, even though you had a mega flood. I don't think it's the flood. I think it's the congestion around the ball. And I say, bring in the limited interchange. 10 interchanges every quarter, plus injuries. So if someone does a knee or a hammy, that doesn't count. That's a freebie. You get 10 changes a quarter, that's it. That's the only way it's going to stop.
But, Mark, I'll just throw one back at you. Question, how, if it isn't rule changes, how do you actually get the coaches to change those players around the ball unless there's some form of rule change?
Well, that's why I say I'm advocating for 10 interchanges a quarter, 40 for the game, because fatigue will do what you can't tell the coaches or make them do. So they can try and pull their moves. But if their players can't run as fast anymore, if they can't get to contest because fatigue's setting in, and they're making errors because their mind is lack of oxygen, so they're making skill errors, then the game's going to open up. They haven't got a choice. You cut the interchanges, you fatigue the players like used to happen in the old days, and then the game will open up and you won't get as much congestion.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We all sort of see it a little bit differently. The only one thing I'd say about that is, are you making the product worse? Because you're saying that by fatiguing them, they're going to make more mistakes, there's going to be more errors in the game. So some people would sort of say, well, hang on, we want the game to be as pure and as good as what we possibly can, with the players being able to, you know, exercise their abilities to the best that they can. If you do that, you're not necessarily going to get that.
Yeah, that's the issue, Mark. Terry's right. There's nothing 100% guaranteed about fatigue opening the game up. There's a lot of thought that if fatigue kicks in late in quarters, that clubs will just congest the contest and hold it in and not take the chance to get it out and run it. So you'll actually get a more congested, less open, ugly game if you add fatigue. There's a few that are advocating you go the other way. Just make interchange unlimited. Forget about putting a cap on it. Forget about having some guy on the bench writing down every time someone comes on and off. Just let the coaches go, keep the game open, and keep fresh guys coming off the bench late in quarters so the fresh guys can keep spreading from the contest quickly and running the ball into space.
Which is what we saw in the All-Star Victorian game. That was exactly how they played it there, and just tried to just keep the freshness in the players as long as possible.
There's a theory that fatigue will stop congestion, but I don't think there's proof. And that's why the AFL hasn't done it. I think if there was 100% definitive proof, the AFL would have pulled that trigger for sure.
Now, why wouldn't we trial these type of things in practice games?
Because we don't want players fatigued in practice games and getting hamstrings.
Yeah.
That's the AFL's fear. Oh, let's try having no interchange. And then three hamstrings get popped and they think, oh, boy, that wasn't a good idea. So I think they're worried about fatigue causing soft tissue injuries.
Yeah.
Greg in Moorabbin, welcome to you, Greg.
Oh, thanks for having me, Duane. G'day, Tessa. How you going, guys?
Good, Greg.
I was just hearing you talking, Duane, for the last few hours about Americanisms and one that creeping into our game. Well, guess what, mate?
Yep.
The horse has bolted. It's over the other side of the Blue Ranges. When you hear about zoning in, zoning out, scrimmage, backs, forwards, and what can you explain to me, because I'm an idiot, what the hell is a bounce down when the umpire's about to bounce it down? Can you explain that to me? Because that would be subterranean.
Well, they throw the ball down when they bounce it, I suppose. So it is a bounce down. In some states, they call it a bounce down. In Victoria, I presume that it's not part of the traditional vernacular, but a bounce is thrown down. It's as opposed to throw up. Bounce down, throw up.
No, you bounce it up, mate. You throw it down to bounce up. You don't bounce it down.
Thanks for your call. Terry is in the house. We care about brains, not hamstrings. So that's a few coming through on the text. Fatigue will also reduce concussion because lower velocity. So, yeah, there is a theory that might be right. So thanks for that text, James. 1-300-736-736. 1-300-736-736 is the number. That the game's been like this for over 100 years. So, you know, there's a few coming through. Interestingly enough, you know, interchange wasn't part of the game back in the old days, but they have changed rules over time. You know, it was once possible to kick the ball out on the full. You kick it 15 rows back and just get a throw in to waste time. And the clock kept running.
Correct.
So the governing body at the time of the VFL said, hang on, we can't. These smart players are just kicking it 15 rows back. The clock keeps ticking.
1966, hit the boundary.
That's right. And it's wasting time. So they brought in the idea of if you kick it out on the full, it's a free kick. And they brought on in the idea of time on. So we've had time on added and a free kick for kicking out on the full. And I don't think anybody has looked. But well, I'm sure there were people back in the day, if there was talkback radio, saying, leave the bloody game alone. Nothing wrong with kicking it 15 rows back and having a throw in.
No doubt that would have been the case. And the other side to all this is that any rule that you want to change, the coaches are going to manipulate it like crazy. You can guarantee that whatever rule you bring in, the coaches will try to make it work to their best interest.
Andrew in Box Hill, you there, Andrew?
Yes, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good, Andrew.
Of suggestion, I've always been in the Bartlett camp about reducing interchange, but I thought of something that would change the game radically, and it would be simple for the umpires. So all contests, bounces, marks, one-on-one. Two-on-one, free kick. So it would change the game a fair bit, but it would reduce congestion. What do you think?
How do you umpire it? So the bounce...
Well, as I said, if there's two, free kick to the individual. So if there's two-on-one, the team that has two, free kick to the individual.
But if you've got, got 10 players around the throw-up, it's going to be hard to know who's actually on who unless the umpire turns around like they do with the ruckman and says who's on who, because you might have four or five guys in a really small vicinity.
And you get
blokes. Well, if the umpires know at the beginning of the year, one-on-one, I think it would change the game radically. Well, I mean, I'm interested to hear Terry's view because he's an ex-coach. What has he thought?
I just think it would be really difficult to be able to adjudicate it. And, for example, what happens with screens or blocks, which happens on a regular basis around the stoppage, you'll get some player go across, block his opponent so that that player gets a better run at the ball. Is that a two-on-one? How do you adjudicate it? I just think it would be too difficult to be able to expect the umpires to call it.
Thanks, Andrew. Shane on the road. Welcome to you, Shane.
Hey, gents. How are we after a long weekend?
Great.
Look, I know no one wants to put a line across the field and whatnot at halfway, but I think the easiest, absolute easiest way to get rid of congestion is have, you know, three forwards, three backs in one half of the ground at all times. So that's six players in the defensive zone or the forward zone for the opposition. And we keep each umpire in their respective zones on the ground. So one in the defensive 50, one in the centre, and the other one officiating the game wherever that, down the opposite end of the field. I think that's the easiest way.
It's an interesting concept, and I mean, it's a concept that's been mentioned a few times before. It's just, do we want a game that changes so much that we've got zoned positions on the ground and you can't move out of that? That sort of takes away from where the game's been for 100 years. So that's the one issue with it.
And the ball rolls, so you've got six on six across the halfway line, but then the ball rolls to just outside the halfway line, but the guys can't run and go at it because then you've only got five inside.
Correct.
The zone. So those players have to stay on the line, netball-like, and, you know, that would be the last thing the AFL would want as well, Shane. But, look, these things have been talked about quite a lot over the last 10 years, and they'll continue to get talked about. If there was a way of doing it, you know, Steve Hocking right now is investigating it. The hard part is making change because it won't please everybody. You make a change and there'll still be people that want the game left alone, even if the game right now is a lot of other people saying that it's congested and ugly to watch. Trent in Clorinda, welcome to you, Trent.
Good afternoon, fellas. How are we going?
All right, Trent.
That's good play.
Fire away.
It's got nothing to do with the coaches, mate. The coaches are going to do whatever they can to win the game. So it comes down to the people who are controlling the game that are going to make any difference, because I could understand when you were coaching Plough, it doesn't matter what the supporters are thinking, you would do anything to have made your team win that football game.
Yeah, you're spot on. Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. And I think that was Kingy's point, that if you leave it to the control of the coaches, nothing is going to change because they're just going to do whatever they need. And so if you have a slightly inferior side, you will pull every trick in the book to try to drag the superior side back to your level. And that happens in local footy. It happens all over the place. That's the way that it goes. So, yeah, it has to be the adjudicators. It can't be left to the clubs.
Quite a few coming through on the leave the bloody game alone scenario. I mean, the things happen. You know, Alistair Clarkson in a grand final had deliberate points kicked. And so you kick it in, you find your man, and he holds it for 15 seconds and then he kicks it. I mean, if you're five goal up in a grand final, you could waste the last couple of minutes by just kicking defensive behinds the whole time.
Well, we saw that with Joel Bowden, and I was coaching that particular day where he just kept taking the ball back through the points on a kick out just to waste time. And, I mean, we were about 5 points in front. He steps out, nothing online, steps back through, 4 points in front. You can do that another three times and just milk the clock.
That's right. So the AFL has to step in and change a rule. So this lead the bloody game alone idea sounds great in principle, but in practicality, every sport around the world changes rules to adjust to the adjustments the coaches make.
And we've had our lowest scoring. And we've had our lowest scoring last year since 1965.
Yep.
What happens if it goes back another 10, 12 points? Are we starting to get worried then? Everyone was talking about the AFLW not scoring enough.
Yeah.
Well, hang on, the men's game's coming back to it rapid fire.
Terry's got a heap of stuff to get to after the break. He wants to talk a little bit of Melbourne, wants to talk a little bit about the Bombers, round one. A couple of teams that are hot early that Terry says you don't want to play. And he's got an issue with a perennially injured player as well that he's going to throw up. So stick around. One of the speckled texts, I'd comment on Kingy, but my texts are never read out. Peter. Yeah, I would never read your texts out, Peter, so don't worry about it. Bravo, Kingy. It's all about the coaches who were taking the task for stuffing up the game, Tim in Mansfield. So, yeah, we do read your texts out, even yours, Pete. Take a break. More after the break. Terry Wallace is with me. We've just seen the Mask series completed, and we're taking a few calls on the Mask series, 1300 736 736. And, Terry, what did you make of it? And there are a few teams from the Mask series that look more up for round one than some others.
Yeah, look, what did you make of it? I think that most of us, I know you've picked West Coast Eagles. They didn't fire that much, but they didn't need to.
No.
I thought the two sides that played on the weekend, Richmond and GWS, obviously are going to be right around the mark again as premiers last year. But it got me thinking, and look, I would like to know from our listeners as well, with the practice match series, the Mask series, did you gain more confidence in your team from the couple of efforts that they had? Did you gain less confidence in your team from the couple of efforts that they put in? Or are you the same because it doesn't really matter and it's only a practice match, so you don't read anything into it?
I gained more confidence in the Saints than I had before that they might rise. I think they've got an experienced coach with a whole new group of guys that actually look like they've got their chemistry up and running earlier, and I love the look of Max King. So second year for Max King, even though it's his first year of footy because he hasn't played a game yet. So in my eyes, Saints have got more confidence than them.
So I lost confidence in Geelong and Hawthorn. I thought both of those two sides, I expected to put on better showings than what they are now.
But not Carlton?
Look, Carlton, I still thought Carlton were a fair way off the mark. I've said on the show before that I thought that they're still extremely young, and I think that talk about them rising pretty quickly, I thought, and particularly with McKay and Curno out at the moment, I thought that they're still a way off it still. So Geelong and Hawthorn are the two for me that I just lost a bit of confidence in. But speaking of the other, I mean, we're going into round one. There's three teams that I wouldn't want to play, that the sides that are playing them in round one are red-hot favourites, absolutely red-hot favourites in the game. But if I was a coach, I'd be nervous about the particular game.
Is the Gold Coast one of them?
Correct. So the games are the West Coast Eagles and Melbourne. It's over in Perth.
Yep.
Everyone expects that the West Coast Eagles are going to be one of the really top sides. They're playing in Perth first up. They just beat Melbourne. But Melbourne are going okay, and Melbourne are sort of, that point-to-prove type side at the moment. They went over there a couple of years ago. I know they got belted in the final, but to get to the finals, they actually won over there a couple of years ago. Just a little slippery slide for the West Coast Eagles. The other one for me is Fremantle Dockers look really organised. They're not the best side in the competition by 100 miles, and they've got injured players at the moment, got a few missing. But they really look like they've actually organised themselves really well. They come to Marvel to play Essendon, who have been excellent, and we'll speak about them a little bit later, but they've been excellent. Everyone expects that Essendon, at home, in front of a full Bomber fan, just win the game. But it's a nervy game because from Essendon haven't started seasons well. They just should be able to just almost rubber stamp that one and put it in the book. But I would be a little bit nervous if I was coaching Essendon coming into that game. And the one particularly for me is the Gold Coast and Port Adelaide, because this one is at the home of the side who is not expected to win the game, the Gold Coast Suns. We saw what they did to Geelong a couple of weeks ago up there. It can be, the Queensland weather can be difficult place. A lot of expectation on Port. We just heard from the captains that 10 of them have picked them to play finals. We know that the coach is on the line if he doesn't play finals. They're playing the Wooden Spooners from last year. Oh, you would be really nervous if you were the coach, Ken Hinckley, going up to play that Gold Coast game. You just want to get it done and get back and worry about your next few weeks.
Yeah, the next week's against Adelaide in the showdown. So that will be a big game. You wouldn't want to be 0-2 because Adelaide don't look as good either.
Correct.
In fact, Tim from Adelaide is on the line. Welcome to you, Tim. What have you made of the Crows?
G'day, guys. Actually, Dwayne, I'll just digress slightly. I'm just going through Paraka, mate. Montague Road, your old stomping ground.
Say hello to Mum if you can, Tim, if she's at the bus stop.
I'll toot the horn, buddy.
All right.
Hey, so the Crows, unlike the last 2 years, guys, we had high expectations, I guess, with great disappointment. I think this year we're all smart enough to understand that, you know, it's the old saying, no expectations or low expectations, less disappointment. I think that's how we're all going into this season. So I personally think finishing anywhere above sort of 12th for the Crows is a bit of a win. And it just depends how we're developing too. I mean, the last thing we want to do is get to round 20 and 21 and not seeing any development of these young kids. But also some of the older heads too. I worry about Tex and where they're going to play Tex. He's not a designated ruckman, we know that. I think he'd have more input to that team sitting in a half-back, crashing packs. And just with his kick, he's got a fantastic kick, and his handball out of defence could be a bit of a bonus. So, I don't know. It's the big unknown, gentlemen. We probably won't know anything until probably June, July, I'd suggest.
And that happens in this practice match series. We've seen sides in the past that you haven't fired a shot in the practice matches. It was only a few years ago when the West Coast and Fremantle thrashed the West Coast Eagles in the last of the practice match series, and everyone started to write off the West Coast and went out and won the premiership. So, it's hard to read. It is really difficult to read, but I still think, and this is why you started off your show, I would love to just go into the season without having played anyone.
So you believe the 24-game...
I love it.
...season?
Absolutely. Oh, look, to me, I think that is the way to go, that nothing, really, you haven't seen anything. Because you do. Some people just lose a little bit of confidence in their side before you've actually even bounced the ball.
Yeah, interesting that way of looking at it. I spoke to a few AFL coaches earlier on today. I spoke to one coach who said that he'd be fine with a 24-game season, no pre-season games. They'd actually like it. They'd just do pre-season as they want to do it, not have to work around the AFL's pre-organised game parameter. I also, Tim, spoke to David Teague, and he sounded quite confident that Adelaide is on a long-term plan that might not bear fruit immediately. He believes it will. But even if it doesn't, he seemed confident that the Adelaide long-term plan is pretty good. And he did seem confident that he had a good list that can actually go up the ladder this season, not down. So it was nice to see that confidence in David Teague earlier today.
I'm not doom and gloom on Adelaide.
Sorry, not David Teague. Matthew Nix.
Yeah, I'm not doom and gloom on Adelaide. I'm certainly not doom and gloom on them. But I think it'll be a hard year. Yep. When you wipe out so many players as they did, senior players off your list, you've got to replace them with youngsters. It just takes time.
I had a chat to David Teague as well, and he did seem confident as well. It was great to catch up with them all. They all seem pretty damn confident, and it's nice to see that they have the belief that even if there's a couple of speed humps early in the season, that they can get it rectified over the long course of time, even if we as fans and lovers of the game react to the 18, small things that happened in round one.
18 months ago, Dwayne, Brisbane Lions were talking it up. Mm. They'd only won 5 games. There was not a lot of believers out there, but by 3/4 of the way during the year, there was.
Take a break. Paul and Rosanna will come to you first. 1-300-736-736. Terry Wallace is with me. Great to have the plough in. Terry Wallace is with us, and we're taking your calls. Terry's named his 3 teams to be really wary of round one. We're taking a couple of calls and few other things that Terry wants to get to as well. Demons are one of them, and the unluckiest player in the league is something that Terry wants to get to as well. Paul and Rosanna, welcome to you, Paul.
Hi, Dwayne. Hi, Terry. You're a great coach of the Dogs. Listen, I'm very buoyant about the Dogs. We knocked North off. Sure, we got pipped by Port Adelaide, but what people don't realise, Bevo's a smart cookie. He played 24 players and Port Adelaide played 26 players. And Bevo does this in pre-season games. So, yeah, sure, we got pipped, but we've had two less players. If we beat Collingwood, which I think we should in round one, then we've got Carlton in round two. We knock them off, and then we've got the big test up in Sydney against the Giants. But I'm very buoyant.
And that's good. I mean, it's great to be going into a season that way. I think they're almost the it side. I mean, we know about the big sides sort of that are above them that they've still got to chase down. But I think that most people believe that the Bulldogs are on the rise and on the march. And I mean, obviously, if they can get Norton back into that lineup, you know, sooner rather than later. Obviously, English having his first hit out on the weekend. I didn't worry about the result of that game either. I mean, it was just a really good practice match hit out between Port and the Bulldogs on the weekend.
Love the confidence of our caller, though. We've got, you know, we beat Collingwood round one and, you know, we've got the big one in round three against the Giants up there. So Collingwood's not the big one. It's round three. Alan in Bentley, welcome to you, Alan.
Yeah, g'day, player. G'day, Dwayne. I just caught the tail end of what Terry was saying about the Crows. I watched the last game, and geez, Bryce Gibbs. If that's a trial to get into the first round, geez, I wouldn't be playing him in the first round, and I'd be sticking with a lot of the young guys that showed a little bit. What's your views on Bryce Gibbs and his future at the Crows?
Alan, I think you're on the money. I think that that's fair and reasonable, your statements that you made. I was very much on Bryce Gibbs' side last year, particularly the game where they dropped him when he played against Melbourne and they put him on to Clayton Oliver and he stopped Clayton Oliver and then they dropped him the next week. I thought that they were a little unfair, but what I've seen of the practice match series, and I've watched both of their games, you know, his skill level is not where it's normally been. He's just off the mark at the moment. So I think you're on the money. I mean, I don't think he's a walk-up start at all.
Thanks, Alan. 1-300-736-736, the number. One on the speckled text, Carlton fan. Much less confidence after the Marsh Cup games. You've got the unluckiest player in the league right now, and we'll take some calls after the break, 1-300-736-736.
Yeah, so who's been unlucky at your club? I mean, you know, just injuries
ever?
Hit them. Ever.
Ever.
Who has just not had a good run at it? And this one is just a more unusual one. There's obviously going to be the guys who have had three knee recos or four knee recos are going to come up pretty regularly. But this one is particularly unusual. And that is, you spoke about it last hour about Jarryn Geary with his injury. Cheekbone injury at the moment. Popped it back out. Looks like he'll be right for round one. So he might have dodged a bullet with this one. But I started sitting back and thinking about Jarryn Geary and where it actually sits. Do you know that he's had three separate major injuries in three games? So I'll go run through it. So he played the first five last year before he got that really nasty compartment injury surgery, which a lot of people have seen the photos of, absolutely graphic. So he goes down with compartment syndrome in that game. He then misses seven games. He comes back for the China game.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in his very first game back?
Yep.
He breaks his leg. So he's out again. Two injuries from two games. He misses the last nine games of last year. He misses the first Marsh Cup game, which was down at Moorabbin. And he plays on the weekend. And now he's got a cheekbone.
Mm.
So that's three major injuries in three games. Surely, I mean, I know that the guys do knee after knee after knee, but surely that's as unlucky as any player that's going around.
1-300-736-736. If you've got one that's even more unlucky, 1-300-736-736. And as you heard on the news, a couple of bits of news floating out. Miley Cyrus has cancelled her concert at the Australian Grand Prix due to advice from the US Disease Control in response to coronavirus. So unfortunately, Miley's not going to be part of it. Robbie Williams will still be part of the F1 GP, I'm told, so that concert will still go ahead. And Gil McLaughlin's holding a press conference at 4 o'clock today after meeting with all 18 club presidents. So the captains we spoke to earlier, the coaches are all at Fox Footy, and meeting up a little bit later on today as a group to discuss the future of the game and where they're at right now together as a group. And I saw Ronnie Watt, one of their advocates as well, just having a chat to them about what their future looks like as a group. The coaches trying to get a handle on some of the benefits that they'd be better off having. And Gil McLaughlin's press conference after speaking to the bosses at all AFL clubs will be interesting. So that's coming your way on SEN at 4 o'clock as well. Terry Wallace with me. A few on the speckled text coming through. One saying that I was talking about every sport changes rules. It's not just the AFL that does it. One coming through saying, on your rule change discussion, Dwayne, Formula One's been changing rules every year for decades and the sport is now worse than it's ever been. The game of AFL needs to be left alone to evolve. Thanks for your text. And everybody wants no rule changes except the one that they reckon's a good idea.
Sure, absolutely correct. When we're talking about unlucky players, there's a few that have come off. Dan Menzel has been mentioned. Anthony Morabito, I thought he was going to be an absolute champion for the Fremantle Dockers. Someone that I coach, Mark Coughlin at Richmond, there's been a few nominations for him. Miley Cyrus is not getting a good rap.
No, I won't worry about reading those texts out there. We'll give it the benefit of the doubt. Scott Gumbleton's got a mention as well. Yeah. He's had an interrupted career as well.
Just couldn't get it right.
Never seen the best of him. We have seen the best of Nick Natanui, and hopefully he's still got some good longevity as well. But, he's another one. Jason Snell of Geelong in the 90s.
Getting hit by a tram's probably fairly unlucky too, isn't it, Graham Pollack?
Yeah, and obviously the sad story about Peter Motley's got to mention as well. One of the more horrific stories in AFL that's happened over time. 1-300-736-736 is the number. 1-300-736-736. The Bombers and the Demons, before I let you go, Terry, because they were on your agenda. What did you make of them both? Because I like your thoughts on, well, you reckon the Demons are hot to trot right now.
Yeah, well, they're up and running. You spoke to Maxie Gorn on the program earlier. You know that their fitness levels are right up and that they believe in themselves. So I just think that they're a little dangerous. The thing that I liked about them on the weekend is all their recruits, I think almost for the first time that I can remember, all their recruits from last year and this year all played well in the same game. Mm. I really like that going in. You know, I think the two boys on the wing, Langdon and Tomlinson, were really good. Obviously, the May Lever connection, you know, worked a lot better on the weekend. So they just had all their recruits up and running. So that was a big tick for them. The Bombers, they actually denied last year that they had game style issues.
Right.
Yet they've had more change to the way that they've played than any other side in the competition. I heard Blake Carosella speaking yesterday about how much work that they've put in with the players. I don't think they're denying it internally. They might have been denying it externally to us on the outsides, but their style of play with their flicking of the hand pass and being prepared to forward hand pass the ball a la Richmond looks a lot better. I mean, we want to see it when the pressure goes right up of a round one contest, but certainly they look good. So for all those Bomber fans who were sort of saying, I give them a hard time, well, I gave them a hard time because they weren't as organised. They look organised. At least you've got a system in place that we can all understand what you're trying to do.
Darren in Sorrento wants to talk to the Bombers. Welcome, Darren.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I think I spoke to you last week, Terry, about the Bombers. We'll see how they stand up against Geelong. You're going to wait and see. They brought more of their handballing, their game out. If you're playing against Essendon, how do you stop that? I mean, I guess the only way is to man up tight. And secondly, I thought Tip and Woody and Fantasia sort of looked a bit out with that game style.
Look, it might take a few players just a little bit of balancing to get it right, but Tip and Woody the week before was absolutely outstanding with that game style. So, look, I wouldn't be too worried about it impacting the players. If you think of Richmond, their small forwards actually come into play because they move the ball so rapid fire. The small forwards have actually come into play more so. So I don't think that that's an issue. I like what they're trying to achieve. We'll wait and see how it all plays out.
Lee Walker's got a couple of mentions. Did he have four knee recos at Collingwood?
Yeah, he was really unlucky and a seriously good player as well.
He hit 16. Listen to the crowd.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Yeah! Lambert with a setup kick for Revolt! This is it! Yeah.
Seen anything like that?
Bontempelli, the future star, the present star, steady!
Oh! Well, we'll have footy golf back for round one in a couple of weeks,
right.
But this is AFLW footy golf at the moment, round five underway. And we go back to the first game, which was Gold Coast and Geelong. Dwayne, I gave the Gold Coast a double bogey. I expected them to win. The Geelong girls were excellent. I gave them an eagle. So well done to the Cats. North got an eagle for a big victory over Adelaide, who were a double bogey side. Adelaide just haven't been able to get it right all season. GWS and Eagle, so there's been a few Eagles thrown around. Must have been a good course. And Richmond, a double bogey. Still haven't got that elusive win for the for the Tigers. Carlton, a birdie, while St Kilda were a bogey. Thought they were okay, the Saints. Carlton just a bit too good in that game. Collingwood finally back on the winner's list again with a birdie. The Bulldogs, a double bogey. Their season sort of is lurching too, not going very well. Melbourne and Eagle with a massive win. Only reason it wasn't, it nearly give it an albatross. Such was the result of the victory, but it was against West Coast, who haven't been playing so well. So triple bogey for the West Coast Eagles, struggling. Fremantle a birdie and Brisbane a bogey for their match. So we've got four sides now on four under.
Okay.
Fremantle, Melbourne, Carlton and North all on four under. On three under, Collingwood and Brisbane. Two under Geelong, one under St Kilda. Evens GWS. The overs are one over Gold Coast, three over Adelaide, six over now the West Coast and the Bulldogs, and eight over for the Tigers.
And we were going to talk about some of your really important forwards. We've run out of time.
We might have a chat about them on Friday.
Will you give me a couple? Because Jeremy Cameron's available for round one. He got a little lucky on the weekend.
Might have been a bit fortunate. I'll go as far to say, and we'll speak about it on Friday.
Okay.
Is there any player, tall or small, that's more important as a forward than Charlie Cameron at the moment? Any player in the competition, more important. We'll have a chat about that one.
I like that.
And one I want to have a chat about on Friday, do you take a risk if you're Carlton or if you are Richmond? Do you pick Coleman Jones if you're Richmond?
Ah.
Do you pick De Conning if you're Carlton?
Nice thought. Richmond could probably take a chance because I think they're going to have Carlton covered.
I think Coleman Jones will play.
Okay.
And I would like to think that De Conning plays, but I'm not sure that they'll pick him.
Okay, let's hope Coleman Jones plays because I like the big guy. He looks like he's got a bit in him and he's been on the list a couple of years, so he's developed nicely. I like it. When was the last time we had a small forward then that would be the most important forward in the competition?
Gee.
Is that going back a while?
Oh, I think it would be going
Can't
back a while.
Can't count Lee Matthews, can we?
Well, I wouldn't count Lee.
Okay.
I wouldn't count Lee. He played too much of his footy on ball to count him. Peter Dacos?
Yeah, that has to be.
Yeah,
Dakes was a superstar, and he still goes down in most people's reckoning, or many people's reckoning, as the greatest Collingwood player of all time. I know Scott Pendlebury is going to be that player and probably is right now in a lot of Collingwood players' minds. But those that saw Dakes went to the footy specifically to see Dakes every week.
Well, tell us anyone that you think is better than Charlie Cameron, because I think he's the best going around at the moment.
All right, well, have Terry on later on in the week, so look forward to Terry coming in Friday. Put that in your book of things to do as homework before Terry comes in on Friday. Look forward to previewing the weekend's footy with Terry every Friday. We won't be doing that this weekend, obviously, because there's no AFL games this Friday, but Terry's at least in my camp that maybe we should lengthen the season to 24 weeks and have no preseason.
I'm absolutely 24, no preseason. Just bounce the ball and get it started.
Who knows? That might well happen.